Blog Talk Radio.
You know the day destroys the night, night divides the day. Try to run, try to hide, break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side, yeah. We chased our pleasures here, dug our treasures there.
Welcome to Break On Through. Here you can travel realms uncharted, blur the lines, break the chains, open yourself to possibilities waiting to be discovered on the other side. I am Pam Ray. With me is my co-host, Intimidus Rex. Rex and I are poets on a website called All Poetry with a group of poets called Late Night Poets. You don't have to belong to the group or the website to call in, to share, to listen, and enjoy, but it is highly recommended. Now, if you find tonight is not your cup of tea, please check out our other shows. We have 1 to 2 shows per night on a variety of styles of topics and poetry, something to suit everybody's taste. Also, make sure when you get a chance to check out the poetry anthologies put out by Late Night Poets, because when you purchase those, you not only get amazing poetry, you help support these radio shows. And hello, Rex.
Good evening. What's up?
Well, you know, same old, same old. Life is good. It's cold, but it's good. Looking forward to hanging out with you and hopefully some other cool poets, delving into the poetry. You know, and I have to say, every year it just feels like winter comes a little too early for me. I'm becoming less and less fond of it. But, can't complain too much. How about you? What's up with you?
At least it's not raining, but it's cold.
I get that. I do, yes. At least the rain has stopped. But, boy, that I can really put a chill in your bones. But, yeah, we've got a nice variety of poetry tonight. Because first I was running a contest with the artwork of Jose de la Barra, who does surrealism art in, like, really nice, rich, bright colors. Lots of blues and oranges and reds. And then I just came across the song By the River's Dark by Leonard Cohen, and I thought, oh, I really like these lyrics. So I ran an 8-spots-only contest for that, figuring if the one contest didn't do too well, then I'd have at least a few. Well, both contests did really well, got some, not only a good amount of rights, but just some top shelf quality. And I see we have Pee Wee hanging out on the board, so that's good. That's good, always good to get his support on the board. And yeah, I wish I could afford to go to Florida. And yeah, like I said, just really a great lineup of poetry tonight. And I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to bring on our guest, Mika. Welcome, Mika. Glad you could join us. How's it going?
Howdy. Good. How are you guys?
All right. Damn. Twice in 1 week.
Yeah. You know you can keep me away forever.
Exactly. Exactly. But, all right. What do you got for us first, Rex?
We have Blue Bayou by Paul Brott. The annual Deviant Derby Horse Derby. All equine entries dressed so superbly. Both black and white stallions against blue they were challenging. Very few stallions ever blue by blue. Around the bend and into the stretch, blue's in the lead, difficult to catch. Turning around is no longer a must. The trailing horses were eating blue's dust. Blue's way out in front by 22 meters. A runaway victory destroyed the demeanors of the wealthy, so few, their lives now as two, realizing they've lost to Blue Bayou. End poem.
Great read, Rex. This is a fun rhyming poem. I like the clever wordplay in very few stallions ever blue by blue. I thought that was cool. And turning around is no longer a must. The trailing horses were eating blue's dust. You know, it just has a nice kind of bouncy feel to it. So excellent write. Very well done. And Mika, your thoughts?
First of all, I love that you said this poem was bouncy. That's such a perfect descriptor. I was thinking as I was reading it and kind of picturing it, and obviously with the picture and all those colors, it reminds me of, you know, when you watch some of the 80s movies and they, like, the opening sequence is like a cartoon. Do you guys know what I'm talking about? I think it happens in, like, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
Yeah.
That's what this reminded me of. I felt like I was watching one of those 80s cartoons that happens in front of the movie.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could totally see that, actually. I like that. I like that. Very cool.
I like the story. It was bouncy.
Yeah, it was. It was bouncy, and it flashed back to the good old days of watching cartoons on a Saturday morning. So, very cool.
Exactly.
And Rex, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
Well, I got to go with the song Blue Bayou. I mean, Linda Ronstadt did it. Roy Orbison wrote it originally with Nelson. So that rings, and it kind of walks in that very same feet, except it turns it on itself with the language. In the song, it goes from wanting to get back to the happiness, so to speak, and this one kind of hits on the angle of taking, especially in that last stanza, of taking the happiness out of the wealthy and the big ones up top, and realizing the blue bayou is no longer theirs to have. It has gone back to where it's, everyone can enjoy it instead of just a few.
Very cool. Very cool. Great comments and observations. All right. What do you got for us next, Rex?
Minstrel's Work Is Never Done by Damn It Dave and Mika. One for you.
Giving me the sonnet. I like it. Okay, Minstrel's Work Is Never Done by Damn It Dave. Alas, a minstrel's work is never done, especially when you've impressed the king. Performances that used to be for fun are now a quite exhausting daily thing. I sing and play at court with little rest, and when I'm off, I practice all the time. It's tiresome, but I try to do my best. To disappoint the king's a heinous crime. I try to grab a nap between my shows. The king gave me a closet with a bed. Though it is rare that I can find repose, I suck it up so I don't lose my head. To bomb before the court's a tragic thing. Next thing you know, the headman's axe will swing. End poem.
Wonderful read, Mika. And Rhett, let's start with your thoughts.
Well, everyone aspires for, a thrill gig, although this is not exactly a thrill gig, because it could end up being a kill gig, because you can't step out, and even though the court jest is the one that actually is the allowable one to roll off the tongue with some barbs that sting here and there, he gets away with it because of he's there to make you laugh and poke a little bit of fun in the meantime. The minstrel is there strictly as that notation to offer the music and some voice in the moment. And that's not an easy gig, especially if you're feeling a little bit under the weather, so to speak, or a little bit blue. You can't let something roll into your music that might displease. And in the end, you end up losing your head.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. There was a type of work. And you know, obviously, this is a beautifully written sonnet. I like what you had to say about the pressure of the work and having to live up to those expectations. And Mika, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
I was just thinking that I really appreciate that he chose to write this piece as a sonnet, because it almost seems like a perfect thing to go with the minstrel, a minstrel poem, because it seems like something, the way it flows, that a minstrel could be like singing and just plucking a couple strings along.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. I think you're right that the, a classic form like the sonnet was a great choice for the subject of this poem. And I like that he puts this as a first-person narrative about a minstrel, you know, who lives most likely like in medieval-type times, and the reality of that life and how, you know, it's that you constantly, especially if you're good, they constantly want you to perform and entertain. I sing and play at court with little rest, and when I'm off, I practice all the time. It's tiresome, but I try to do my best. To disappoint the king's a heinous crime. I like that this also, another thing I like about this one is that you can bring this concept into modern times. When you're somebody who works for, you know, for the masses, or like, you know, you're accountable to the big boss, or, you know, even if you're a modern-day singer, you're accountable to your fans and to give them what they want and to give the record companies what they're looking for. So excellent write and very well done. And
good point, Pam.
What do you think? Thank you. Thank you. And what do you got for us next, Rex?
Just One Autumn Leaf by Julie Buck. That one's yours.
All right. Just One Autumn Leaf by Julie Buck. Little smirks like just one autumn leaf, alone and defenseless. I want to rip the smug right off your gloating mug. When I grow up, I long to be a jester. mocking much like you do. I'll poke things with my fake scepter and ask questions without speaking. Namely, I'll watch and I'll see. Only a face will I be because I built a colorful cartoon wall in front of me. Self-awareness is overrated, whereas cold indifference is never outdated. End poem. I always enjoy the attitude that Julie brings into her writing. And Nika, your thoughts?
I really, really like this. The way that she interpreted the prompt, it's like it's speaking to my parental trauma, I think. But alone, and I want to rip the smug right off your gloating mug. It feels like there's like this mixture of looking up to the mentor and also hating them. Like, and at the end, instead of dealing with the trauma of kind of having that chaotic upbringing, the best medicine is just to laugh it off and to build that colorful cartoon wall in front of you. I don't know. It's such a deep poem for being so brief, and I really loved it.
You're right. And you know, there is a bite and a sarcasm at the end, and despite that, despite the imagery of, like, you know, building this cartoon wall, it really is, as you said, a deep poem with that idea of not becoming, you know, that which we, you know, like not becoming that person who mocks other people. And so excellent comment. Yeah. And Rex, your thoughts?
I'll bite into that sort of the plebe, the one lent out as to be the next generation, so to speak, along to be just a mocking much like you do. But there's even a mocking tone in that. I'll poke things with my fake scepter and ask questions without speaking. The idea of getting more out of it than you actually deliver. And then the thought of self-awareness is overrated, whereas cold indifference is never outdated. There is a mocking undertone in that too, because if you don't have some self-awareness as that jester, you don't last as the jester. You end up in the dungeon.
Yep.
But the cold indifference works as its own.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's a really great observation. Yeah, I like this all the way through, but I especially liked, I'll poke things with my fake scepter and ask questions without speaking. You know, I just get the whole idea of somebody communicating just simply by those glares or those raised eyebrows. I also really like, namely, I'll watch and I'll see. The idea of observing, I think, works really well for this poem. You know, the idea of, you know, paying attention to how people are reacting, or, you know, or how you're affecting people and putting into that. And so excellent write and very well done. And what do you got for us next, Rex?
Harlequin's Harlot and Lute's Liar's Lie by Kiri Kusan. In suspect suspicion of some suspicious traditions, was it all just superstition? The Harlequin's Harlot is seeking a soft spot she may stop to rest her eyes. Dancing through the circus skies, Lute's Liar's Lie was a received vision. Quite coarsely captivating, this performance permeated ascension to sky. Ephemeral, elegant, effervescent, although only one the true seated divinity, sensationally relatable but inescapably apt to show, which was who no one knew. Cavorting and carousing, craving her home, the ill-fated cursed obscenities, lasciviously lasciousness and all she stole from us, the loose liar's lie, it's true. Deceptively disingenuous, the liar didn't take this vacuum via air via chute. Taking one last bow, looking around, then curling up on the ground. Nothing was left, you see, scent of cheap perfume and the liar's loot. Miss Lovely Hollifin's followed while she was nowhere to be found. Patriarchy, you see, changes the face of history, makes men the one greatly askew needing review, the tale goes off. Hollifin's Hollet, or Helios followed, you may well know as the sun, ever so fickle a face lutes lyre phases, in stages, as we call her, the moon. And Paul.
Great read, Rex. And I did send you a message just to let you know. And Mika, your thoughts?
Oh, this was really cool. It's weird. It kind of reminds me of one time we had a prompt of, I forget her name, but she was a bronze sculptor. And her, like, purported mentor actually stole a bunch of her work and passed it off as his own. I think it was for Twisted Tuesdays. You guys
yes.
posted her biography, and it was so interesting. And that's what this story reminded me of. And there's just a lot of really cool wording throughout. This guy has, you know, I've just started reading his work on the shows, and he has a really, like, a flair for rhythm. And it doesn't conform to, like, necessarily the, like, just rhyme. It just flows well. I really like the line just right at the beginning, too. The Harlequin's harlot is seeking a soft spot she may stop to rest her eyes. I don't know. It's a really well-done poem.
It really is. It really is. And you're right. He has a way with word choices and rhythm that works really well. And I liked your observation. And I know exactly, like, I can picture the artwork and I can picture the woman's story. And I know her name started with C, and it was a French name. But, like, you know, I can't remember it exactly. Claudette or something like
Camille.
That.
Camille Claudette.
Camille.
You got it. It's Camille Claudette
yeah.
or something.
Oh, yeah, probably Claudette. But, yep, very cool. I like that observation. And Rex, your thoughts?
Well, I like to play out the title, Hollifin's Hollet and Lutes, Liars, Lie, the idea of two entities. And he rolls with that throughout, offering up the notation to which one does while the other one does. And there is that nice, where was it? Can't find. Anyway, oh, yeah, taking one last bow, looking around, then curling up on the ground. That note of saying goodnight, so to speak. So this is all about how it's kind of almost a note to offering up the sun and the moon in a different arena, offering up both their attributes and their dictates, as well as what one takes from the other or takes from us, and kind of rolling it into that flame of it could be what a minstrel might offer up as a note to explain how the sun and the moon work and their effects.
I like that, the idea of putting the mythology of the sun and moon into song. Very cool. Very cool. Yeah, I really thought this had wonderful lines throughout. I really liked dancing through the circus skies, looted liars lie, was received a vision quite cordially captivating this performance, which makes me think of the idea that when he says, was received a vision quite cordially captivating this performance, that the vision itself is a performance to lead people astray or, you know, to fool people. I also like the alliteration in this, ephemeral, elegant, effervescent, the true seed of divinity. I like also, like, powerful lines in patriarchy, you see, changes the face of history, makes men the one greatly askew, needing review, the tale goes off, he is but the buffoon. I like how this takes a nod towards history and towards the idea of how in ancient history, you know, goddesses existed, and goddesses were oftentimes representation of the power of the moon. I also like that he brought in Helios, the personification of the sun. And so very cool lines, an excellent look at the idea of changing of mythology and history. So very well done. And what do you got for us next, Rex?
No Matter the Season by Kay Heartless and Mika Ashwati.
Okay. Kay Heartless, No Matter the Season. No matter the season, untanned clouds sunbathe on high, mounded moods, pale flesh against a blue terry cloth sky. And like the soft indent of petals searching for a stream, no wind or rain or thunderstorm dare disturb their fertile dreams. For the bearers of all life lie still, slumbering. End poem.
Wonderful read there, Mika. This is a beautifully written brevity. I like how she tells a story with this brevity. And, you know, again, we have a look at what feels like a goddess. And I like the opening line, no matter the season. And to me, it feels like it could be read two different ways, like no matter what time of year it is, but also no matter what season of life I'm in. You know, I'm going to be out there, revealing my pale flesh, being vulnerable, exposing myself to the storms of life, and just a really, to me, strong in speaking of the idea of for the bearers of all life lie still slumbering, and there's a kind of a darkness to that, to me, in the idea that life is put on hold. It has a very mythological feel to it, so excellent write and very well done. And Rex, your thoughts?
I like the bite in that pale flesh against the blue terry cloth sky. That's a nice motif, the sort of blue terry cloth sky, something soft, natural in the moment. That second stanza, you can walk... bearing oneself to the elements, so to speak, even maybe off a little bit dark, but you can also walk it in the sort of, there's a gentle undertone of sensuality within that one, too. So, and the back end, for the bearers of all life, lie still slumbering. It is an angled motif at where one goes when they sleep, a matter of where you delve into after those tidbits of life's morass.
Yeah, I like that. The idea, as you said, the kind of the motif of where you go when you dream. I also like that you mentioned there's this kind of delicate, this undertone of sensuality to it. Because, yeah, there definitely is. Excellent comment. And Mika, your thoughts?
I don't know. I was thinking of a totally different comment, and then when Rex was talking, I was thinking about that kind of eldritch, like H.P. Lovecraft type of concept, which we're like we're in the imagination or the dream of some other being. I don't know. I really like the imagery of and like the soft indent of petals searching for a stream. No wind or rain or thunderstorm dare disturb their fertile dreams. It's really lovely. And I feel like there's so many ways that you can read it and kind of just let it transport you.
I like that. And you're right. There is different ways that you can interpret this. But, yeah, I like the thought of how living in that dream, somebody else's dream. A very cool observation. And what do you got for us next, Rex?
Paper Bird Ascension by Duncan Ross Bell. And that is yours.
Okie dokie, Smokey. All right. Paper Birds, number 7, Slow Descent by Duncan Ross Bell. Paper birds flying low, paper dolls on final calls, frozen glares and broken stairs, battered by memories, tattered by eventualities, burial in a paper clip, not lost but forgotten, a flipbook to what has been. We keep achieving the foreshadowed, smiling through disaster, no fear of hereafter, all laughter and fractured dreams. And though each day it's fading, there's no regaining, staining to preserve the what, when, we, where, who. It's all mementos and baggage, pennies in our fountain, a burden on demand. Paper birds at journey's end, in spite of winds, this fight descends. End poem. And Nika, your thoughts?
Wow, this was awesome. You guys just got so much good poetry for these prompts. We keep achieving the foreshadowed, smiling through disaster, no fear of hereafter, all laughter and fractured dreams. That is, I don't know, just really resonating with me. I feel like it works on multiple levels. It works on like a personal level, and it also works for us as a society. We keep achieving the foreshadowed. Reminds me of how history repeats, and we keep kind of falling into these same patterns of, I don't know, just kind of losing what makes our society great. I feel like I'm going a little too deep with it, but yeah, I felt like it really resonated.
Yes, definitely. I have to agree with you. And yes, we are for sure getting some great writes for tonight's show. Yeah, Duncan Ross Bell, he has been doing these paper bird writes, and they're always variants, but they're always, you know, got the paper birds in there. And like you said, and I think this is a great observation, it works on a personal level, but it also works on a level of, you know, taking a look at society. So, excellent comment. And Rex, your thoughts?
Life and death. You look at that, paper birds flying low, paper dolls on final calls, the note to use and the note to the back end of life. A flip book to what has been, those pages, burial in a paperclip, the idea of pages of your mind that you walk into and you know, make note of during the course of your life. And he hits on that with the second one. Smile through disaster, no fear of hereafter, all laughter and fractured dreams. And then that third stanza, and though each day it's fading, there's no regaining, staining to preserve the what, when, we, where, who. It's all mementos and baggage, pennies in our fountain, our burden on demand. Kind of hits at the idea of older in life, or walking on towards maybe the onset of the mind fracturing, you losing yourself, and paper birds at journey's end, in spite of wind, this flight descends, in spite of what you have left in your lungs, you still end up reverting back to what was that he had at the curtain call, so to speak.
I like that. Very cool. The idea of life, death, and everything in between, and the idea of losing, you know, the mind and reversing back. Yeah, so great observations there. I really thought this had just brilliant imagery and metaphors. I really like tattered by eventualities, burial in a paperclip, not lost but forgotten. You know, I like that idea on how he speaks on how it's so easy to forget ourselves, to forget history. We keep achieving the foreshadowed. I really like the use of the word foreshadow, because, you know, the idea of foreshadowing is that, you know, that idea of that hint given. And, you know, the idea that, you know, we see the hints, we see the possibility of, you know, what is going to happen. And instead of trying to avoid it, we continue forward. Pennies in our fountain, a burden on demand. You know, I like that because it makes me think of the idea of the futility of wishing, whether it's wishing for our own life to change or, you know, society to change, whatever the wish is, you know, wishing to go back in time, and, you know, it's there's a futility to it, and we should rather be just appreciating the moment, even at the journey's end, which can be very difficult to do. You know, so excellent, right, and very well done. And Rex, what do you got for us next?
Mythos Menagerie by Alex Benson. You got a sound glass.
Okay. You know, Rex, didn't you read my message? I didn't want to go through all these rites before getting to the carryover. I actually wanted to do the, sorry, but, you know, I had wanted to do the carryover at the beginning of the show, but at the very least, I didn't want to go through all, like, 15 of these rites before getting to the carryover.
All right, I'll go back and get it. I thought you wanted the in-between because you had in-between both.
No, that's why I explained to you that I accidentally put it there. But I needed you to do the carryover first. That's what I had told you. So, thank you. I appreciate it.
A Trinity of Hope by Liquid Mind Forever. Now I've forgotten my place.
I don't know, but it's Liquid Mind Forever, so you go ahead and read it.
A Trinity of Hope by Liquid Mind Forever. Clearly, there is no hope whatsoever. If we are dreaming as scripture tells us, and we all aware that hope depends on someone or something other than self, and in a world where there is no one here, from where and from whom does it come? Of course, in miracles. What is hope? To whom can we turn for an answer to inspire us to hope? And what do we hope? An afterlife? A peaceful death and dying process? A life without struggle and suffering? A day without fear laced through every action we take? Let us listen to the hopeful pronouncement of a woman who traveled, who lived in solitude, who traveled on wing and prayer and find solace. Hope is the thing with feathers that perches in the soul and sings the tune without words and never stops at all. And sweetest in the gale is heard, and sore must be the storm that could abash the little bird that kept so many warm. I've heard it in the chillest land and on the strangest sea, yet never in extremity it asked a crumb of me. The condemned man is every man and every woman born of flesh. Each act is a test, a confessed inadequacy, a need to become, to fulfill, to reach, to exceed, to condemn ourselves to a life of seeking and searching for what will never be found. A futile, endless, ongoing distraction from silence. Immediately, we visualize a condemned criminal on death row and ask, what is this hope? A stay of execution ordered by the governor at the fatal hour? A marriage counselor, the carrying out of his sentence? Not everyone wishes to continue his or her existence here only. Fear stops the suicide of mass numbers on this planet. Fear of being held in purgatory for eternity. Fear of the infernal inferno. Lying in agony, dying slow, with nowhere to go, circling endlessly. We're all doing time. Who is not condemned? Think on this. Everything in one shape or form asks us to accomplish, achieve, make a name, exceed the norm, and the same edict demands we push and never quit, no matter what. What is so great about keeping on and on and on? We hear it's the human spirit. It's indefatigable. Another parable, another fable, another house of seven gables, disabling us, enabling us, prodding the mind with ego, any number of noisemakers with their myriad distractions. Is that not condemnation, I ask you? G.I. Jane with Demi Moore exemplifies the indefatigable, enviable willpower and endurance of the female spirit, and she's likened to a wild thing. And the grand finale? She saves another soldier, her master chief, from death. Heroism, the greatest condemnation, brainwashing our world armies to lay down their lives for a government solidified by weaponry and death. The condemned man, what is his hope? Because we, the populace, cannot tolerate the notion that we're here alone or by ourselves, and everything that we do that happens to us depends upon what we think. However, we, you and me, we defend against, yet we depend upon something beyond, outside the mind to solve, to save, to hope for, the condemned, even the Christ hoped for remission, for this cup to pass from me, but it did not. What aid laid its cool palm upon his brow, sweating blood? An angel of mercy sent from God spoke to him, enlivening him, inflaming him, reminding him of who he was. Is there a sign of hope for the condemned man in there somewhere? End quote.
Great read, Rex. I thought this was a strong write. It had brilliant imagery and metaphors. It was thought-provoking. I like how this speaks on the constant search for the idea of hope and the idea of a condemnation, how we condemn others and we oftentimes condemn ourselves. I like the nod to Emily Dickinson with "Hope is a Thing with Feathers." I thought that was really cool. There's lots of cultural references here. G.I. Jane with Demi Moore exemplifies the indefatigable, enviable willpower and endurance of the female spirit, and she likens to a wild thing. Of course, the nod also to E.H. Lawrence. And this is, to me speaks very strongly on the mercy that we should be showing to each other. Heroism, the great condemnation, brainwashing our world armies to lay down their lives for a government solidified by weaponry and death. I like how that speaks on the idea of oftentimes heroism or the desire for it to be a hero can become a trap to both the body and the mind. So excellent write and very well done. And Mika, your thoughts?
Oh, that was a really good comment. And this is an amazing poem. I think my favorite parts are the parts that begin with the condemned man, what is his hope? It's just the sarcasm, a stay of execution ordered by the governor at the fatal hour, a marriage counselor carrying out of his sentence. She's got a tongue firmly in cheek. It's dry, and yet it has so much behind it. And the ending, just brings that all of the sections together perfectly. Is there a sign of hope for the condemned man in there somewhere? It's really incredible and made to be performed. I really loved it.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely great comment. Thank you. And Rex, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
Well, she hit on one thing in there, brainwashed. And the idea is this isn't just about death itself, but hope is that brainwashed thought of, yes, you still have life within you, so there is still hope for life on this world as well as life eternal after that. So that is supposed to give you a breath of notion within your soul to keep moving on. But the idea is the brainwashing, whether it comes from the kings to down to their armies or from the church down to the people. It's a matter of how one perceives the thought itself. If you walk on the notion of hope being dillied out from one entity or not, or do you place the hope that you have within yourself itself?
I like that, the idea of placing the hope within yourself rather than allowing yourself to be brainwashed by the masses. So great observation there. All right. And what do you got for us next?
Mythos Menagerie.
Ah, well, that would make sense. All right, by Eric Svensson. And as you had said, we do have a SoundCloud for that. So here we go.
Mythos Menagerie. High altitude alpaca dude. Ribbons a dream stream. Buoyant upon a board, Lake Titicaca goddess floats. White lotus flower purity bloom. Festoons fine filigree air with primal purity. White alpaca dude remembers the Apus mountain gods, a fertile valley populated by peaceful, prosperous humans. No lack, hack, or fears flack. Fecund, fertile land nourished. No misdemeanor of death, hatred, or ambition's malnutrition. The Apus protected human beings. One teeny tiny tot law was inscribed. Stay off the mountain where the sacred fire burns. Curiosity killed many cats that time around. Of course, too much bliss becomes a bore. If you're human, did they also say the devil made us do it? Too much bliss or spirit of adventure killed many, many cats. High altitude alpaca dude remembers a ribbon dream stream. One fine day at dawn, men began to climb the mountains. Lake Titicaca goddess wasn't afloat on her buoyant board. Diligent earth co-creator woman, she tended white lotus flower rice paddy elsewhere. Calamities of calamities, dire extremities. Apu mountain spirit spied the first human cockroach approach. Exterminate immediately. Scarab adroit. Pumas came out of caverns and devoured the men. Oh, the sack and ash cloth of too much bliss. Curiosity killed so many soup cats that day. Savior sun god Inti began to cry. Abundant tears flooded the valley in 40 days. Only a man and a woman managed to survive in a boat. When smiley sun shone again, under a true blue, pure sky, we were in the middle of a huge lake. Beneath us floated round pumas transferred into stone statues. Sealed with a kiss, we crossed our hearts and promised never to allow stray cat curiosity in. Info.
Wonderful read and write, Eric. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. And just a reminder, everyone, if you're unable to call in, the next best thing is to make a recording of your poem, because then we get to hear your poetry and your voice. And Rex, let's start with your thoughts.
He's dug into the Incan mythos, so to speak. Apis, the theme of the Apis Mountain gods. Apis Mountains are the it's both it walks both male and female. Apu being the male and Apis being the representation of the female form within that mountain itself. It's it's held high in esteem in within the religion of the Incas. And the thought of the Inti is that sun god, which was the ultimate god within the Incan belief system, and paid homage to. It was often represented on gold shields with flames coming out all the way around it. The idea was that it hits on that note of on this end it would be Noah and the flood, but this walks into the flood notion in the Inca belief system, and hits way on the washing away of humanity, because he hits on the notion of how humanity had turned into cockroaches, time to wash them away, and rebirth within the second cycle of life, and how every so often there is this huge cleansing of the earth, so to speak, so that the next iteration of humanity can rise up and walk cleansed once more. And that's what he's sitting on.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, it's always been interesting to me how different cultures have a flood story. Like, there seems to be a consistency with that. I thought you had great observations on how it's about the Inca religion and takes us back into that place, that history. And the idea, as you said, of the cleansing of the earth. You know, the sense of renewal. So, great comment. And Mika, your thoughts?
I really liked the mythology of this. I grew up in Bolivia, and I've been to Lake Titicaca, and I liked it being pulled in here. I saw a mermaid in that lake. I think this captured... I think this poem captured a lot of the magic. It felt good tone-wise, like it matched it felt South America. I liked it.
Oh, very cool. Yeah, exactly. It does have that vibe to it. You know, actually, up until I was an older kid, like a teenager, I thought Lake Titicaca was a made-up place. I honestly did. So
it sounds super made up. It sounds super made up. No, it is really cool though. They have like ancient runes on the side of the lake, and there's islands in the middle called the Island of Sun and Moon, where they use them for religious rituals. And it just feels magical when you're there. Like it has a weird smell, and it just smells and feels like magic there. And that's what I think this poem captures.
Oh, wow, that is really cool. Yeah, that's going to go on my bucket list, you know, visiting something magical.
You better take
like
me
that.
With you.
There you go. There you go. It'll be our bucket list. But yeah,
I'm co-opting your bucket list and grafting it onto mine.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, I really like the alliteration in this, the imagery, how he delves into the goddess and the magic of the land. Lake Titicaca goddess wasn't afloat on her buoyant board, diligent earth, co-creator woman. She tended white lotus flower, rice paddy elsewhere. The idea of the goddess being distracted and then following up with that, calamities of calamities, dire extremities, you know, to me that also speaks really well on how when we ignore a problem when it's still small, it becomes a bigger problem. And those end lines speak really well on the idea of a flood and renewal, as Rex was saying. Under a true blue pure sky, we're in the middle of a huge lake. Beneath us flowed drowned pumas transferred into stone statues. I like that because it makes me think there actually are stone statues that are under water, you know, and it's just fascinating to see pictures of them and fascinating to think of the history that has been sunk beneath waves. So excellent write and very well done. And Rex, what do you got for us next?
The Jester's Dilemma by Popo, poet of Kasanakai. That one, Mika.
Sorry, I put myself on mute. 1 second. Okay. Poet of Sanakai, The Jester's Dilemma. In circles dancing round the squares, upon the jester's court, a foolish clown for all who gaze within the castle's fort. A silly jingle's foolish hat, it pays for residence, a drumstick tossed upon the floor, her pay for impotence. Her fate to prance to please the eyes of guests who truth despises, medieval jesters dressed in garb of colorful disguises. To dance upon the checkered floor, a handkerchief's delight, to please with music acting dance, or risk a cutting night. Such pumps the blood of common folk who answer to a king, awake at dawn to work till dusk and toil burdened sing, until the dusk becomes the dust, a tomb in which to lay. One questions as the curtain draws, a joker's worth to play. End poem.
Great read there, Mika. Yeah, this one was another one. It's a great rhyming poem. Very similar theme to Damn It Dave's poem, the performing for the amusement of other people. I did particularly like a silly jingle's foolish hat, it pays for residence, a drumstick tossed upon the floor, her pay for impotence. The idea of being put into a job, being made the fool, being made the clown because you dared to speak up about something. I also really like, such pumps the blood of common folk who answer to a king, awake at dawn to work till dusk, and toil burdens sing. And I like the line, in toil burdens sing, because it makes me think about the idea how oftentimes, you know, people, you know, would use singing as, you know, and music as a way to get through, you know, working out in the fields. And, you know, it kind of gives thought to that, how the only source of enjoyment and your entertainment for yourself is the music of the common folk. So excellent write and very well done. And Rex, your thoughts?
A form of payment for something that worked around. That's the second stanza. A silly jingle, foolish hat that pays for residence. A drumstick tossed upon the floor, her pay for impotence. A note to helplessness. The fact that she can't do anything but accept the role to which she has been handed. Fate the prince, please the eyes of guests who truth despises. Medieval jesters dressed in garb of colorful disguises. The fool, the knave, the clown, you're there for a reason. And it is just to amuse the retinue in the court. And there is no, well, since everyone is under the thumb of the magistrate in this particular realm, it doesn't matter who it is, whether it's a king, whether it's a lord, whether it's a fifth removed prince from the throne itself, it doesn't really matter. You answer to the person who sits high in that room itself. And the idea of until the dust becomes the dust, the tune in which delay. One question is that the curtain draws, the joke is worth the play. So the idea is what worthiness of self do you get out of this other than at least a bed to sleep on, maybe a shekel or two here or there as payment, but otherwise you are relegated to the court, and whatever the court wants, the court must be delivered to.
Absolutely. I like that you bring up that thought that of her own helplessness, that she cannot get out of the role that she's been forced into. Great observation there. And Mika, your thoughts?
I might be a little off the wall, but I was going to hone in on the sorry, I just lost my part. Damn it. I had a part I was going to talk about. Okay. Oh, okay, okay, I found it. Okay, so her fate to prance to please the eyes of guests who truth despises. I really liked that, and it reminded me of, so one of my best friends, he's a comedian, and, like, sometimes when he will say a joke that is a little too much for people, like, a lot of people will get really offended, and I understand kind of where they're coming from, but also it's sometimes it feels like you have to play a certain tune for them. If you hit too close to home, it will upset them. And that's what that line reminded me of. Because we have modern day gestures too that are playing for the common people. Comedians, you know, they get their material from the everyday life. What makes it absurd and what makes it funny is when they say something that's close to home but not too close to home. So I feel like that, I guess that balance is kind of what was coming across in this poem to me. And then at the end, you know, there's almost a regret that you didn't play to your own tune, that you kind of played the fool for everyone else, but you didn't truth speak, I guess, the way that you feel like would have been meaningful.
I like that. I like that. And so oftentimes, meaningful things are said through humor, but unfortunately, it is a balancing act where sometimes people can be take things too personally. I do remember, I can't remember who the comedian was, but there's a comedian who had a quote along the line, "If stupid people didn't exist, I wouldn't have a job." But yeah, I like that observation in the idea of playing for other people and playing the songs that they want to hear because, you know, there are certain lyrics, certain, you know, thoughts that can offend. So excellent comment. And Rex, what do you got for us next?
Lovely at Sea by N. Sai Ulo the Don. That one's yours.
All right. Lovely at Sea and by M. Sai Ulo the Don. Midden under the floral bite is the sunflower's own delight. Halt the sun to soar and breathe. Distant energy comes with a flight of ease if we consider the people as trees. There is a pending term that we are like flowers, photosynthesis urn, the light we shine for all to soar when we bring others to the front of heaven's door. But at an ease we shed a light energy in the floor and energy in the sight. Birds may know it all too well, singing songs in the early morning early. Autumn is just time to brace in the sunshine's halt at the calm at haze. Casper in the scent to spree. Two people are a prayer in the light of a plea. Come together in the scent to form. Lift up your voice in the prayer's dawn, even if as joker you may pond. There is a lightness in thee, O you intimate song, lovely at sea. The way's prayer is the haze of me. End poem. All right. And Mika, your thoughts.
I really liked the lines, but at an ease, we shed a light, energy in the floor and energy in the sight. That was a cool kind of transition because there's just this building of the energy. It's distant in the first stanza. And then in that part there, like, the light comes shining out of you when you're at an ease. So I feel like, I don't know, it's almost like it captures one of those moments where you're not trying anymore, and it happens naturally. It's kind of like when your muse visits and you want to write, and you try and you try and you try to write something, but it doesn't come out right. But all of a sudden, when you're not thinking of it or trying anything, it will kind of dawn on you, and you create. And that's the light that's shining out in this poem.
I like that. And you're right, though. Between those two parts, there is a really good transition. And the idea of letting that light shine without forcing it out. So, excellent comment. And Rex, your thoughts.
Well, it starts with mittens. Most people would take that as, a glove, so to speak. It also hits on the idea of middle, in between, that note between and heaven and earth, that middle ground, the sunflower's own delight, offering up how the sunflower itself, as the sun cascades across the sky, so will the sunflower follow to garner all of the sun it needs for that day before it closes up once more. So the idea within the that we are like flowers, photosynthesis urn, it's kind of a note to the brain taking in all it can, offer up that shine. But also it's on a couple other things that we shed a light, energy in the flood floor, energy in the floor, and energy in the sight. There is much to be seen as well as much to be thought upon, but it also hits on the idea the prayer is dawn and then offers up the ways to prayer is in the haze of me. So it's kind of that thought. You look at the turn your face to God, turn your face to the sun, and you'll see the center of yourself.
Absolutely. Yeah, I like how you brought up the idea of the energy of thought, that, you know, and so very cool comment. And I really liked the imagery in this one, the idea of finding that inner light. I particularly did like the line in the first stanza, but also that we are like flowers, photosynthesis urn. The idea that we earn that light, you know, by letting go. And I also really like singing songs in the early morning. The idea of the music that comes from us, the light that comes from us, and how, you know, we just need to, like, learn to release it out into the world and at the same time keep it for ourselves so there's a sense of balance. So excellent write and very well done. And what do you got for us next, Rex?
A moment on the side of Summerland, Mount Rainier National Park. by a swan song. On the side of this jagged ridge, with valley after valley spread out in a rolling sea of green, interposed by blue bodies of water reflecting each cloud as they pervade across the sky, I feel a playful touch of wind as it strums through my hair, sending a chill down my spine as my hot body takes in gulps of thin green air. Slender spruce trees twist towards the sky and bare grass blooms with tiny huckleberries, ready to burst their purple sheets. Avalanche lilies bloom all across a sloping meadow, with bright yellow pistils swaying in a kind of craze for this moment of heaven on earth. Nearby, the constant song of a chattering creek rushing down through a ravine. Creek stones streaked with quartz and tiny waterfalls open to clear pools, bordered by dew-covered havens in their buttered blooms. Two marmots play tag through the rich green grass, and one catches the other. Their muscles kiss softly as they roll fat belly up to feel the cool air and soft yolk sun. To the water, I drink my fill. The cold explosion resounds through my body, and I see my reflection, then my smile. End poem.
Wonderful read, Rex. I always enjoy Swan Song's writing. Just stunning imagery. He does an excellent job of writing about nature. And I like how he takes us into the moment with the imagery. I particularly was drawn to slender spruce trees twist towards the sky and bare grass blooms with tiny huckleberries ready to burst their purple sheaths. You know, wonderful use of the word sheath. And I like how this really speaks on the gifts of nature, the colors, the beauty, the fruits offered up, and even the cold water. Next to the water, I drink my fill. The cold explosion resounds through my body, and I see my reflection, then my smile. And I like that ending because, you know, it's that it's wonderfully observational in the idea of realizing that you are happy in this time, in this place of your life, you are happy. So excellent write and very well done. And Mika, your thoughts.
Oh, man, this is beautiful, beautiful imagery. I was also impressed with the word sheath, with that blooms with tiny huckleberries ready to burst their purple sheaths. But all of the imagery is just incredibly vibrant. And I feel like you are there because of how gorgeous the imagery is as you're listening to this piece, and it's like you can't help but take a really deep, peaceful breath.
Absolutely, yeah. I have to agree with you there. There is that idea of being able to take that deep and peaceful breath. So, excellent comment. And Rex, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
Green Egg mounts that most people don't ever get to see, yet he's living in the dream itself, walking within these twisted valleys, jagged ridges, and just to see the role of what most people don't ever get to see, those the huckleberries, the marmots, the crisp, clean, clear water fresh off the mountain melts. So there is a noted touch to something actually to smile about.
I like that, the idea of being able to live the dream. And so excellent comment. Very cool. All right, and what do you got for us next?
We have Vers Tete Reton by M.
You might want to click on the English translation there, Rex, so you can.
Well, belated the rest. The upper half is done in German, and the second is the translation that they're running with.
Right, right. But Yeah.
Anyway.
I knew that.
That would be Mika.
Okay. Belated rescue. How deeply I was struck by the old tale, with grief and remorse deadly heavy. Oh, heart, I must hasten to the Duke. No longer stay here in silence. Grandson Caspar died days ago, could not bear father's shame. The maiden sits in the dungeon hole. For her soul I still hope. When all horrors devour me, I still reach the Duke's ear. I will lament to him in a flood of tears, and Unkin's freedom be my reward. Here I ride in full stride, and do not stop till the center of the court. The Duke has given pardon. See all here the veil float, woven only with white thread. I see the judge's hand raised. Hold, she is gifted. With your judgment, stop, wait. But it was too late. The axe falls, and with it sinks the elder's world. A grave for both, she wishes. Anne rests with Caspar eternally. So let their marriage be joined with hot tears often shed. The old woman shall be given to the side, in joy they shall live on, where under God's bond of peace, the blessed walk hand in hand. And poem.
Wonderful read, Mika. And Rex, your thoughts?
Walks on an old tale. It's a Romeo and Juliet thought to this, with the act of one dying and the other being offered up as the token going forward with a beheading. So there must have been a kind of hits on the thought of maybe a bit of duplicitous a flood of speaking behind the back of the Duke, so to speak. And he gives over and offers up the girl as well. So the elder's world, it's on a elder's world. A little bit of magic. And so let that marriage be joined with hot tears often shed, the old one should be given to the side. In a joy that shall live on, where under God's bond of peace, the blessed walk hand in hand. That kind of hits on the back end of solemn prayers, because the death was supposed to have been stopped, but yet was not. So, a little bit too late in the moment.
Absolutely. Cool comment. Thank you. And Mika, your thoughts?
This is a really cool story. I like that Rex said that it was like Romeo and Juliet. I agree. I like that the prompt that you chose kind of resulted in a lot of fairy tale rites, or if not fairy tale, with that kind of medieval theme. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I too really liked that there was quite a few rites that went into medieval times or into mythology, which I thought was a cool way. And I do like the how this has a very epic feel to it. You know, great imagery, great storytelling. But I like that she opens up with, how deeply did the old fairy tale hit me? And because it's not just, she's not just retelling us the story. She's telling us in the very beginning how much of an impact it has made on her heart, on her thinking. I do like, where there's this idea where it's the judge says, I watch the judge's hand raised, stop, she is gifted. Hold your aim, wait. The idea of the gifts and the blessings of life, and that come oftentimes at the last minute or are realized, you know, just in time. So excellent write and very well done. All right, what do we got next, Rex?
Mama Bird by My Angels 3. Yours?
Okie dokie. All right. Mama Bird by My Angels 3. A little birdie once told me it's morning. It'd twitter at the rising sun, announcing itself to potential mates every single day. I used to resent the existence of that bird, blue and cute and up for the worms, daring to disturb my precious sleep, my fragile peace, my sacred silence. The memory of music haunts me. Only a watered-down version remains, like my brain is a tin can full of the ocean. When I try to recall a specific song or just a note, memory stretches and thins as though the music sits on a piece of gum being pulled out from my mouth, away from me, in ever-increasing vagueness. No, there is no music here, only wet echoes of wailing ghosts. I take that moment right now, despite the agony and fright. I would happily relive that moment like a Groundhog Day as long as I could hear it. I trade 1,000 screams of agony for this emptiness. Silence is golden, so goes the expression. When you're deaf, you don't get to feel silence. Silence is that serene sensation when the din of the world dissipates away. And you can just lay tranquil, and that feeling doesn't exist for me. Just as a blind woman cannot know the relief of closing her eyes, there's no silence to escape to, only silence to suffer within. I miss the sound of my children. Doesn't matter doing what, just the audio accompaniment of their very being. I miss knowing they're hurting from slight crackles in their voice, or knowing their anger from huffs and puffs and the slamming of doors, or knowing the intended tone of the word mama. Mama, I'm back. Mama, can I have? Mama, come see. Mama, I'm sorry. Mama, I messed up. Mama, I'm scared. Mama, I'm here. Mama, I love you. The bird had a mama, too, who'd listen to it warble demands of warmth and food. I wonder if she ever got sick of listening, ever wished for its silence. I lie in soundless ache, just wanting to wake with the birds. End poem. Wow, that was a beautiful and emotive, right? And Nika, your thoughts?
Oh, my God, I don't know. I'm kind of astounded. It's incredible. I can't believe that. So when you go back and read the poem again, it's like, I can't believe the first time I didn't realize what was going to be revealed because of the reverence. But yeah, I didn't. And so this stanza, when I try to recall a specific song or just a note, memory stretches and thins as though the music sits on a piece of gum being pulled out from my mouth away from me in ever-increasing vagueness. No, there is no music here, only wet echoes of wailing ghosts. It gobsmacks me. I don't know what to say to that. It's beautiful. The memories that follow of being able to hear, like, I don't know what you say to that. It reminds me a little bit of grief, of losing someone, and how you start to forget their face. And she's forgetting a whole other aspect. I don't know. I'm really blown away. I think this is such a beautiful poem, and made me tear up a little bit.
Yeah. I have to agree with you, and it is beautifully written, and it doesn't, you know, there's like little hints, but you have to really go back and read it again after you catch up and realize that it's like, this is about the loss of her hearing. And then you're right. She does write it in a way of grieving for that loss. So excellent comment. And Rex, your thoughts?
Give it a triad of play. The thought of losing hearing, that walks easily within this, and you could take it literally for what it means. But it also hits on the idea of empty nest syndrome, especially where the mamas come in, wanting that note again to have that live action running around. But there is another note in that. No, there is no music here, only wet echoes of wailing ghosts. So if you want to walk a little step further, you could think of the emptiness, the silence, the deafness is death itself, because she lost her family. And she hits on that, I take that moment right now, despite the agony and fright, I would happily relive that moment like a groundhog day, as long as I could hear it. I trade 1,000 screams of agony for this emptiness. The emptiness, the heaviness of heart.
Absolutely. Wonderful thoughts shared there, Rex. And I like how you mentioned the idea of the emptiness of the empty nest syndrome. So great observation. Yeah, I really like the emotional impact of this rite and the idea of grieving and loss, and the imagery and metaphors, and thins as though the music sits on a piece of gum being pulled out from my mouth and away from me. The idea of that forgetfulness, I thought the imagery was great in those lines. I also, it really hits hard with the repetition of mama, You can just imagine wanting those days back, wanting that time back. I also thought it was really nice the way she mentioned that silence is a gift. You know, silence is something you're supposed to escape to and not suffer from. So excellent write and very well done. And what do you got for us next, Rex?
Masked by Scott Sharp. We are empty, faceless people hiding behind masks, disguises. The ability to fly eludes us. Pigeons on a perch with a message nobody wants to hear, not even the butterflies.
Great read, Rex, and what a wonderful brevity by Scott. I like how this speaks on the idea of wearing the mask and telling the messages, saying the messages that, you know, nobody wants to hear. And it's great. It's really difficult to separate the different parts, but I will say that pigeons on a perch with a message nobody wants to hear was very powerful, because it really makes, to me, strong social commentary on the idea that people want to be in their own little world and remain ignorant of what is out there. So excellent write and very well done. And Mika, your thoughts?
I love the ending. The ability to fly eludes us, pigeons on a perch with a message nobody wants to hear. It's, I don't know. I'm really struggling to make good comments. I'm sorry I'm so rusty, but I just really love the wording of it.
It is. It does have beautiful wording. And I think you're making great comments, so don't worry.
Well, thanks.
And Rex, your thoughts?
I go with a social commentary on the flatulence of social commentary.
Ah.
The ease of hiding behind a name and a fake picture online, offering up that which no one wants to hear, because it is pretty much verbal flatulence and oral diarrhea.
That makes sense, especially with the idea of the mask. You know, how people oftentimes will, you know, hide behind a profile and a picture. So great observation. And what do you got for us next?
Wounded Dawn by Liquid Mind Forever. And Mika, we're up for you, please.
Okay, Wounded Dawn. Gone, gone in a wounded dawn. Gone in a wounded dawn. Gone, gone in a wounded dawn. Gone in a wounded dawn. Gone are the fields waving tall yellow corn. Gone the fields golden corn. Gone the deer and buffalo horn. Gone the fields golden corn. Our nations mourn forlorn and scorned. Deer and buffalo, they are no more. In a wounded dawn, gone is a nation's torn. First nations mourn, first nations mourn. Deer and buffalo, they are no more. In a wounded dawn, forlorn and scorned. Gone are the fields waving tall yellow corn. Gone, gone in a wounded dawn. Gone in a wounded dawn. Gone, gone in a wounded dawn. Gone in a wounded dawn. Born over meadows, shorn buffalo horn. Over rivers, up mountains we mourn. Born over meadows of buffalo horn. Gone in a wounded dawn. Gone, gone in a wounded dawn. Gone in a wounded dawn. Gone, gone in a wounded dawn. Gone in a wounded dawn. Gone, gone in a wounded dawn. Gone in a wounded dawn. End poem.
Great, great read there. And I like that Liquid Mind Forever did something different and wrote a song. First of all, I thought it had a wonderful lyrical quality, and the repetition and the word choices gave it a very rhythmic feel, which, you know, felt like the idea of the Native American drums, you know, being pounded upon, being played. And we've now gone into the By the River's Dark contest. And, you know, to me, I really like and appreciate when people write about history and about the history in Native American culture. And I thought this was a strong song on the idea of the history. I felt it in my heart. It was the history of violence that destroys a way of life and the first Nations people. I did tell her I thought she should get somebody to record this, because it really, I mean, and you did a wonderful read, Mika, of that. Very, like, you kept a beat and a rhythm in your reading that worked well. But I really feel like this needs to be recorded by someone that she can talk to them and say, you know, this is the tune I want. This is, you know, like, and I don't know if she sings herself, but I definitely think this one needs to be made into a recording. So excellent write and very well done. And Rex, your thoughts?
Wounded Dawn, kind of thought of Wounded Knee. Attached to the notion of what of the massacre in 1890, so it kind of works along that line, and the pinning down and corralling the Indian population into lands they weren't familiar with, and the loss of everything in between, the yellow corn, the deer, the buffalo, the predominant note of the way you get to people to actually fold into what you wanted by taking away that which they live upon, that be the deer, the buffalo, the corn. It just kind of hits on that note.
Yeah, it does. And I like that you brought up, because I hadn't thought of that myself, I should have, but that the connection of Wounded Dawn to the Wounded Knee and that massacre. So excellent comment. And Mika, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
I wish I had known what tune to sing it to, because it is a really beautiful song. I think it's just so appropriate that for a Leonard Cohen prompt, she wrote a dirge. And the subject matter is really cool. I like, Rex, what you called out there, but it's such a longing dirge of a song. And that's just perfect for Leonard Cohen.
Yeah,
it really does
need a melancholy note to it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yep. It like you said, Meek, it's perfect for a Leonard Cohen prompt. And as you said, Rex, it just needs that melancholy tone to match the words. So, all right. And what do you got for us next, Rex?
Paper Streams by Casey Day. You got SoundCloud.
Yes, we do. All right. Let me mosey on over there. And here we go.
Paper Streams. I'm still climbing, but this mountain grows. Drinking from a river that no longer flows. Life goes fast and it's hard to keep pace. Got time on my mind, but not enough to waste. Chameleon woman could never camouflage. Kept her dreams locked in a heart-shaped box. Made her way up the altar stairs. Broke her back and cut her hair. I'm still climbing, but this mountain grows. Drinking from a river that no longer flows. Life goes fast, and it's hard to keep pace. Got time on my mind, but not enough to waste. Dreamer dare, dream a dream. Dreamer dare, dream a dream for me. Dreamer dare, dream a dream. Float on rivers made from paper streams.
Wonderful read and write, Casey. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It's very much appreciated. And Mika, let's start with your thoughts.
Oh, this is gorgeous. I'm so glad she provided a SoundCloud on, because she just read it so beautifully, and the poem is so soft. I really liked that the second line, drinking from a river that no longer flows, really resonated with me. And it reminds me, you know, when you combine it with the life goes fast and it's hard to keep pace, got time on my mind but not enough to waste, that sometimes when you're trying to, whether it's introspect or do what you love, pour yourself into passions, but you're kind of torn in two different directions because so much of you and so much of your energy is just into your day to day. At the end, there's an admonition to float on rivers made from paper streams, like continue to dream the dreams. Don't let yourself be completely swept away into that mundane world of reality.
I like those thoughts. And yeah, there is that kind of idea of struggling to stay dreaming and not give up when life is filled with so much harshness. So excellent comment. And Rex, your thoughts.
Oh, it sounds like a song and reads like a song. And it has me thinking of a song, and I can't remember it. Something out of the, I think, Dream, Dream, Dream. I think out of the 50s, I think. Anyway.
Isn't that the Mamas and the Papas? Or am I going to?
I don't know. I couldn't think of who did it.
Yeah, probably not.
I think it was by the Mamas and the Papas. It was Ella Fitzgerald, but Mamas and the Papas covered it, but it is Ella Fitzgerald.
Oh, okay. Okay. Cool.
Anyway, I think that's the sort of broke her back and cut her hair and hits on the note of pain in the moment and trying to change that which who she is, but still rolling back into, I'm still climbing. But this mountain grows, turns into a river that no longer flows, and still making that effort. And then the back end, dream a dare, dream a dream, dream a dare, dream a dream for me. It's on the float on rivers of paper streams. It hits at the notion of don't lose those paper streams.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that. Great observations there. Yeah, I thought this was beautifully written. It did have a song-like quality to it. Wonderful imagery throughout, great rhyme. It's just a beautiful write on daring to dream in the fragility of life, and the idea of being asked to sacrifice yourself, you know, being asked to sacrifice your own dreams. So excellent write and very well done. And what do we got next, Rex?
12th Wrench Sauce by Erickson. You got a staff song for that, too?
All right. Let me find that. Here we go.
Talk, Wrench Sauce. Mississippi's wide wake. Grand Canyon's deep stake. Runs the river Styx, fish, fowl, friend and foe, asphyxiate. Dark the deep river's hunger for soul slivers. Death's nascent narker cling cloys. Ferryman weighed down by too many pouches. 30 pieces of silver. Between the Tigris and Euphrates, milk, honey, and hubris flowed, wider than the Mississippi, deeper than the Grand Canyon. Oh, quickened days, quicksilver, toxic fumes exhume souls, mercurial with mercurochrome, flaming sword seraphim, multiply, scarab legions, mummy, kings and queens, dank, dark river Styx, arcs, fish fell, friend and foe, become nevermore, poe ravens. We Gideon bend down, lap up water on all fours, we're fearless of the river Styx, implore our cerebral clay caves, crack open clay pitchers of blinding light, plead with our placid heartstrings, weave unleavened bread baskets to feed the poor, ziggurats bulk buckle, bend over tone death defiance. Suzanne, Marianne, and myself down by the river, dark, dank rings beneath our eyes, weighed down by frugal pouches, Ophelia emaciated we drift, mauve lotus flowers abound. Babylon denies us 30 pieces of silver. Babylon denies us 30 pieces of silver. Ferryman won't take us. Ferryman won't fake us.
Wonderful read and write, Eric. Thank you for the SoundCloud. Very much appreciated. And Rex, let's start with your thoughts.
All right. it seems to be a roll of note to trying to buy your way past the gates of the of Karen and drift into the netherworld, when that's not about buying your way past, so to speak, especially the sort of the 30 pieces of silver offers up a note to transactional betrayal. And it doesn't work on that. But he hits on that because he also got a wee Gideon bend down, lap of water on all fours, with fearless of the river Styx, implore us to river clay caves, crack open take pitches of blinding light, feed with our clasped heartstrings, weave unleavened bread baskets to feed the poor. All right, that's a great note of doing that which you should on the back end of things as purity of heart. But But then again, you've got the Ziggurat's buckle, bend over, tone deaf silence. Then Suzanne, Marianne, and myself down by the river, dark dangling things in our eyes, weighed down by frugal pouches. Ophelia emaciated, we drift, both lotus flowers abound. And then that thought in the ending, Babylon denies us 30 pieces of silver, ferryman won't take us. And again, kind of offers up that note to too many people trying to buy that which is not theirs to be bought in the first place.
Absolutely. I like that. I like that thought and the idea that some things are just not meant to be bought. You know, so excellent comment. And Nika, your thoughts?
Well, Dan, this is a really cool poem. I'm still kind of working out, like, what I interpret from it. I feel like there's some sections that made me think maybe it's about substance use. Between the Tigris and Euphrates, milk, honey, and hubris flowed wider than the Mississippi, deeper than the Grand Canyon. It just feels like this pursuit and devil may care what happens in the pursuit of it, and it never ends up delivering, whether it's the oblivion or the euphoria you crave. And the other part that makes me think of that is the dark, dank rings beneath our eyes, weighed down by frugal pouches. Ophelia emaciated, we drift, mauve lotus flowers abound. Where it's like you get to a point and you can't even get any higher, but you still haven't found it. And I'm trying, so that's kind of my interpretation I got on first read. But when I'm looking closer, we Gideon bend down, lap up water on all fours, we're fearless of the river Styx. I really like that, and I don't know how to fit it into my first interpretation, but in the Bible story of Gideon, the Lord basically tells him that he has too many people in his army, even though he's vastly outnumbered, and all the men go down to a river to drink. Most of them bend down on all fours and lap up the water, and only a few cup the water in their hands and bring it to their face while they're still being vigilant. And God makes all the ones that lap the water up go home and only fights and wins the battle with those who cup the water and brought it to their face.
Yep.
So anyway, my inner Bible nerd is struggling with my first interpretation of the poem. I have to think about it more.
I like both interpretations. I do like your interpretation of the idea of substance abuse and looking for that high that you can no longer get. But yeah, this is one of those that you have to definitely do more than one read. You have to go through a few times and really kind of pick through. Of course, you know, I was attracted to the part we Gideon bend down, not only because of like my inner nerd, but because, well, I have a son named Gideon. So, you know, that instantly caught my attention. I really enjoyed the imagery in this and the alliteration. Fish, fowl, friend, and foe is 68. Dark, the deep, rivers hunger for soul rivers. The idea of losing parts of ourselves, losing our soul, our humanity. I did get, for me, the main idea, and I think part of this probably came from the part about the Gideon bend down, the being unobservant, that the main theme I got was the idea of being weighed down by apathy of the unwatchful heart, of becoming less and less aware. I did like his nod towards Leonard Cohen with Suzanne and Marion, which, you know, I know Suzanne for sure is a song of his, and I'm pretty sure Marion is too. And the mention of Ophelia emaciated, we drift, mauve lotus flowers abound. And I think those lines actually speak real well to the thought that you were sharing, Nika, being lost in that drug-induced phase. I thought, again, a nice lyrical quality, especially in the end line. And I also really liked the Nevermore Poe Ravens. Fishfowl friend and foe become Nevermore Poe Ravens. The idea that we become these messengers of doom and death. So excellent write and very well done. And what do you got for us next, Rex?
Well, Eric Heard, I walked my usual off inside putt, and Nika, you were right on track. Eric says you hit the notes with your thoughts. And Pee-wee, I was thinking of Rocky Raccoon too, because there is a nice little stance in there about Gideon's Bible. So great thought on that one as well. But we're going to Rivers Dark by Kingsley Meadows. Pam, that's yours.
All right. And it's good to see Eric hanging on the board. And Rivers Dark by Kingsley Medland. And it goes like this. By the rivers dark, I lay myself low, bitter and broken by what I now know. Above me sits a lone crow. I would have it peck out my eyes, so I need no longer see that it tear out my tongue. So the words I'll not have to speak, that it feast upon my heart. So it no longer beats that brings about my death. Of this I do entreat. For the truth is cold and stark of what you did to me, a betrayal so complete that I am emptied now and made hollow, ever to feel anguish and endless sorrow until thoughts blacken and turn to revenge, and I will have you meet your end under the river's dark end poem. And Nika, let's start with your thoughts.
I love reading all these Leonard Cohen writes and how much of a lament they are. Especially the fact that you paired this with the Jose de la Barra poems, because that contest was full of vibrant colors and the poems that you received were kind of vibrant and bouncy. And then we come to the somberness of the Cohen contest. And the juxtaposition is just totally doing it for me. Above me sits a lone crow. I would have it peck out my eyes so I need no longer see. It would tear out my tongue so the words I'll not have to speak. There's such kind of a despair in those lines, and also a resolution within the self. I loved it.
Absolutely. I like that, the revolution of the self. Very cool comment. And your thoughts, Rex?
Reminded me of Through the River by Talking Heads. Walks along the very same tone, except at the end, offers up the fight with until Fort Black turns to revenge, and I will have you meet your end under the river's dark.
I like that. I like that. Yeah. Yeah, I can see the connection with that song. Very cool. Very cool. And, yeah, I thought this was a wonderful story with the idea of a mind twisted to plans of revenge by the kind of betrayal that stabs and twists the knife in the back. So beautifully written and very well done. And let's go ahead and maybe if we have another one we could fit in.
Let me see. The River by Janet Davis. We knew it might be dangerous, the signs that do not swim. We didn't let that hamper us and jumped in on a whim. We splashed and played beneath the moon and had a lot of fun. But then it all happened too soon. Our crew was missing one, pounding all our price. We found that we'd lost two. The sheriff came and shook his head. Kids, did you read the sign? I'm sure those two by now are dead, as sleeping beneath the brine. The river is a haunted place. Its reputation thrives. Folks vanish here without a trace. It's taken many lives. A party swept the nearby woods. They drank the river too. But Mike and Bob were gone for good. There's nothing we could do. It's been 10 years. Now I stand again next to the sign, with flowers in my trembling hand for those that is this land. And Paul.
Great read, Rex. What a wonderful rhyming poem by Dammit Dave. You know, I do love a good classic horror story, you know, a good classic ghost story, which most of this hits upon. But it also, in that end stanza, touches on the idea of the way that grief continues even with time. It's been 10 years now. I stand again next to the sign with flowers in my trembling hand for those beneath the brine. Beautifully written and very well done. And Mika, your thoughts?
I liked the ending of standing next to the sign with flowers in my trembling hand for those beneath the brine, because it reminded me of the ending scene in Carrie, where the hand comes up from beneath the cross in the house. That's what I had. Thank you.
Very cool. I like that. I like that. And Rex, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
Oh, I like the open-ended bias with the final at the end, because it doesn't offer up the who a watching might be. Kind of walks in that very same tone of it. Only the kids get paid.
You kind of faded out there, Rex. Sorry.
I said I like the open-ended angle on this, and it kind of walks that very same tone of it, only the kids get taken. Not by noted thought to who or what it is, because there isn't an inkling. It's just that they just disappeared. No bodies, no bones, just gone.
Yeah, that is so true and very cool comment there. It does have that feel of like it. So, absolutely. Well, I have to say this has been a wonderful show tonight. Great company, you know, excellent poetry. Thank you, Rex, as always, for co-hosting. Thank you, Lisa, for calling in. Thank you to Pee-wee, Eric, and Alice for hanging on the board. Thank you to everyone who wrote for the show, is listening now or maybe listening later. We truly appreciate you all. And Rex, you want to give a shout out about your Sunday show, what you got going on?
We have Fun and Parodies with Weird Al Yankovic. You can go with one of the ones that are already listed, or if you've got a particular song in mind that you'd like to do a Weird Al type parody for, have at it. Just list it in the AM.
Absolutely, yes. That should be a fun show. So everybody check out that contest that Rex is running. And make sure to write for that. And have a good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good show.